Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
This piece has been brought to you by Bonnie Plants, bonnieplants.com.
I'm Dave Arnold, host of Cooking Issues. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
And welcome to the Food Scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. I'm your host, Michael Harlan Turkel. Here today with someone who probably has the best food name I've had on air so far, Paul Salmon. And that's salmon like the fish.
That's right, Michael.
How often do you actually have to kind of say that?
I don't know. It's been sort of even my dad used to say salmon like the fish.
Yeah.
So I think I kind of said it all my
because
life.
Because there's another salmon world that isn't aquatic that someone might mispronounce your last name.
Just a very misunderstood name, I'd say.
Yeah. And this accent that we're hearing right now, it's funny that we're going to lead into Jamaican food and culture and cuisine. But in no way are you Jamaican.
Well, I wouldn't quite say that, but we can't really go there.
Yeah.
I'm from, well, kind of, you know, I'm from Australia. It's like the Commonwealth.
Oh, yeah. It's a bigger island nation.
We're cricket playing.
Yeah. You know? That's true. These commonalities, you know, because Jamaica, as I know it, I grew up with a whole bunch of Caribbeans. There's British influence, there's Spanish influence. It's a much more worldly place than this kind of umbrella term, Jamaica.
That's out of many one people. That's the country's motto.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's definitely a mix in its heritage of all kinds of different countries that have come together. I actually think that's one of the great things about the food is that it's been influenced by so many different parts of the world.
Yeah, I mean, how did it draw you in? Because coming from Australia, you moved to the States to do finance.
Yeah, well, that was my sins of the 90s, really, you know, being a long time out of that game. But originally, I did come here. But I actually went to Jamaica before I moved to New York. I started going there, and I had about a month off before I moved to New York. And I spent that month in Jamaica, sort of traveling around the island. This is back in 91, 92 kind of time, so a long time ago.
Yeah, and why there? Why did you choose Jamaica?
Well, like most things, of course, it was a girl that kind of, you know, that drew me there originally. You know, I was chasing this Aussie girl who, like, I'd met and been dating, and, you know, she was totally captivated with the culture and the music, and it introduced me to it, really. And that's how I ended up heading down there.
Yeah, I mean, talk to me about that first day, that first foray into that culture and music. I mean, what took you over? I mean, because right now, Jamaica is kind of your life.
It really has become that. I think it's a combination of things. I mean, to be honest, I think part of it goes back to the familiarity of the culture and the Commonwealth. And there are so many things that are very similar, actually, in many ways to Australia. Within Jamaica. So there was partly that, but also just the people. You know, that first trip, you know, the girl I was traveling around with was, you know, she'd gone to study anthropology in the Caribbean Studies Department at UCLA. I mean, she was really deep into the culture kind of thing. So, you know, this was not, it was very local style. Everywhere we caught the local minibus, you know, we traveled all around the island, you know, whether it be, you know, in the inner city in Kingston, we went down to Studio One and met Cox and Dodd and, you know, like these sort of archetypal figures in Jamaica's history, you know, that she had already laid the groundwork of. And so, you know, it was a kind of a very much a meet the people kind of introduction and, you know, and often on their own terms, you know, not really a touristy sort of approach. And I think it just through that process really fell in love with the country and the people and its vibrancy.
Yeah, I feel like when people nowadays say anthropological, it's usually paired with food. A lot of people, you know, it's how you ingratiate yourself or how someone else kind of helps you assimilate into a place is through a meal. What were those first bites in Jamaica like, and was it that familiar setting?
I mean, look, I got to say, you know, it was pretty, you know, we weren't exactly fine dining, let's say. But I think that's actually one of the great things about Jamaica is you can sort of have an amazing meal at a you know, 3 a.m. in the morning at a 44-gallon drum sort of cut open that's cooking the jerk. I think from the start, you know, it was this kind of great spicy mix of foods. I mean, I love patties, you know, and there were lots of those. That was a bit of a staple back then, you know. Pretty much as we traveled around, we tried all sorts of different foods along the way. You know, it was a great, you know, a great experience from, you know, and it's kind of interesting because regionally different things happen in food. You know, as you travel around Jamaica, you know, you got the guys in middle quarters who come at you, you know, or down at towards the western end, the guys that come at you more with like bags of peppered shrimp, or like, you know, you stop off at these truck stops and eat kind of amazing food as you work your way around. But I was definitely more dining at the, you know, at the low end mainly then, you know, like much more the street food kind of style.
Yeah, and I mean, that's been incorporated into how you open up Rock House Hotel. You know, though there are many levels of dining there, it feels like that approachable street food vibe.
Yeah, no, I mean, absolutely. One of the restaurants at the Rock House is called Pushcart, and it's really inspired by the street food style, you know, and you know, much of it harks back to kind of traveling around the island and seeing the different kinds of street food that are out there.
Yeah. Can you set the scene, though, of Rock House? Because when you go on the website and you see those blue waters and Caribbean vibe, I mean, it's hard not to book a ticket there instantly.
Absolutely. I mean, it really is a magical place. And, even back in the early 90s, when I sort of first walked into that property, it was really incredibly beautiful. I mean, it's on this little cove called Pristine Cove, and it's really 20 thatch roof villas along a, you know, 30-foot cliff face, you know, with a sort of a jumping bridge, and it's quite magical, you know. I think it was in Condé Nast Traveler, they actually have that annual readers survey or whatever. And one year we were, you know, voted the most beautiful hotel, you know, I think in certainly the Americas at the time, you know, because it really is this natural, incredibly beautiful location there.
It's funny to associate the words beauty and pristine with jerk. I think we have to define what that means before we talk about it anymore. It's kind of the eponymous seasoning of Jamaica.
Right. And I think that, you know, there's, jerk is sort of both a source and a technique, I guess, you know. So you can, something is jerk if you just put, you know, the jerk marinade or jerk, you know, jerk seasoning on it, which really revolves primarily, you know, around Scotch bonnet, the fiery sort of hot pepper. And pimento, which is, you know, their kind of allspice on the island kind of thing, are the two kind of indigenous key ingredients of jerk. But it's also, you know, an approach to sort of slow cooking that is, you know, done differently around the island. You know, like I said, you know, you'll be able to get a jerk chicken, you know, off a pan-cooked jerk chicken, which is sort of a 44-gallon drum cut in half and pan-cooked like that. You know, or you can go to sort of Boston all the way at the other end of the island from where we are down in Port Antonio way. And, you know, they kind of slow cook underground traditionally, you know, the jerk, you know, in a coal pit. And so, you know, there's different approaches. Some call that jerking the meat, you know. So, you know, it's in some ways it's an approach. There's another way of doing it, like there's a place called Scotchies in Montego Bay that does awesome jerk, and you know, they slow cook on actual on the tree, the pimento tree. They lay across a fire, slow cook on the coals with corrugated iron laid over the top of the food, and then and peel it off. That's another sort of approach that hybrids between the kind of slow cook tradition of underground, but also layers in the marinade.
See, don't you wish DOH would allow you to do this at Miss Elise? I mean, it just sounds like magic. The underground, the coal, you know, on the tree.
Yeah, I mean, look, that would be awesome. I mean, you know, we've kind of come up with our own approach at Lily's that certainly tries to, you know, mimic the taste and the slow cooking approach. You know, we at Lily's, we kind of have a 3-day process to our jerk. You know, we kind of brine it the first night. The second night, we marinate it overnight. And on the third day, we slow cook it in a CVAP oven. And really, when you order it, we're just finishing it on the grill to get the grill marks and to finish it off. So we've come up with our own sort of methodology, if you like, that kind of tries to mimic that flavor.
Yeah, I mean, and I can vouch for your jerk chicken. I've been a longtime customer of the Islands in Prospect Park. And, you know, that's kind of my go-to. And every once in a while, I cheat on it with Miss Lily. So it's, I have to admit that on air. It's kind of like, you know, like AA. But another thing that I certainly go to Miss Lily's for is the beef patties. And, you know, this is something that, again, is all over Crown Heights, a lot of areas of Brooklyn that have a large, dense population of Jamaican and Caribbean peoples. I mean, you see beef patties everywhere, but outside of New York, I mean, it felt rare.
No, and I think it's one of the things we're sort of, you know, we've really developed at Lily's too. I think, you know, we've kind of gone with more of a gourmet sort of style. It's, you know, we house make the whole thing from scratch every, you know, each day they're rolling them out and stuff. And so I think that's one of the specialties that we've been able to develop. But it's certainly a ubiquitous thing in Jamaica, whether it be your juicy patty down there, you know, that are kind of like a McDonald's chain store almost across the island.
You know?
Where you go in and get your patties. It's a very much a staple.
Yeah.
I've got to say that's another kind of relationship to Australia. And Australia have these meat pies that are kind of in the same vein, you know, these pastry-wrapped, you know, ground beef kind of pies.
Yeah, but I feel like Jamaica puts it over the top with, you know, giving you cocoa bread. And then they should give you a hammock and a nap afterwards.
It totally takes it to another level, that's for sure.
I mean, some of the other things introduced via Miss Lily's was curry goat. And, you know, here at Heritage, we have Heritage Foods and we do Goat-tober every October and are trying to bring that protein kind of more to the forefront, but it is a staple of the Jamaican diet.
Oh, absolutely. You know, there's no doubt goat is one of the key things down there. I can tell you a bit of a funny goat story if you...
I'd rather hear a serious goat story. Right, no. Okay. Let's hear it.
No, well, maybe not so. This is pretty serious at the time. You know, when we first bought the Rockhouse, this is back in 93, I guess, right? We were developing the property, you know, we kind of had big work crews. We settled on the property in August and we'd planned to get open for Thanksgiving, right? So that's not a very long period of time considering the sort of renovation, construction that we had planned. So we had a huge crew of people working. And we were cutting down this one tree that's right where the restaurant is now. And this tree supposedly had some sort of spirit living in it. And the guy cutting down the tree had a chainsaw. And he'd take out this bottle of rum every now and again. And he'd sprinkle it on the tree and cut a little bit more and then sprinkle again and cut more. Anyway, I know this doesn't sound like a goat story. But anyway, the next day, the guy with the, you know, he got about half the job done. The next day, he doesn't show up to work. And another guy takes over the job, right, with much less respect for the spirit in the tree. No rum, no procedure. He's cutting down the tree, and his chainsaw goes out of control, and he actually cuts himself, right, with the chainsaw. And, I was on property. I took him down to the doctor. It wasn't too bad. I think he had, like, 8 or 10 stitches, right? And I come back to the property. The whole property is down tools. We had about 120 people, you know, working there at that point. And, you know, this was my first insight into sort of, you know, Jamaicans can sort of lead you on down a path, right? The whole property start, you know, down tools and they're like, you cut the land wants blood, we need sacrifice, right? And you know, we're kind of thinking, are you serious? Like, you know, and anyway, they're like, yeah, we've got to get a goat and we've got to slaughter a goat on property and spread the blood around. But really, it was all about currying up the goat, bringing in a whole bunch of red stripes and having a party to, you know, consecrate the ground. So now every time we do new construction, we curry a goat on site as part of the process.
I only wish that happened every time you saw a construction. construction site in New York. But we're going to take a quick break, being that that was the GOAT, greatest of all time, GOAT story I've ever heard on this show. You've been listening to The Food Scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. We'll be right back.
Just your garden. It's the way you live. And there's so much to know. But you have help. Bonnie Plants. Now with Bonnie's app, Homegrown, you can learn about veggie and herb varieties, track and record your garden with photos and notes, share on Facebook and Twitter, and so much more. How'd you ever grow without it? Get Homegrown with Bonnie Plants for iPhone and Android. The more you know, the better you can grow. With Bonnie.
The one and only Dave Arnold brings the noise to Heritage Radio Network every Tuesday on Cooking Issues.
Coming to you live on the Heritage Radio Network from Roberta's Pizzeria in Bushwick, Brooklyn!
If the bomb was going to drop, and you only had 15 minutes,
which is like, I can make a sandwich in 15 minutes. He would be eating a sandwich.
I'd kiss my wife, make a sandwich.
If you believe that it's all about to be over, why eat healthy? Not a freaking Neanderthal. I like a tempered ice cream sandwich. But it's the only way to get around it if you're a party master, because you're going to wind up, like, your kitchen's going to fill with dishes. And
some people have commercial dishwashers in their house.
Who?
I've seen them.
Who?
I've seen them.
Who?
Really rich people.
For more mile-a-minute knowledge from Dave and the crew, listen to Cooking Issues, available on Heritage Radio Network, iTunes, and Stitcher.
Hey, and welcome back to The Food Scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. I'm your host, Michael Harlan Turkel, here with Paul Salmon of Miss Lily's. And if you didn't hear the greatest of all-time goat story, please listen to the first half of this episode. Miss Lily's has kind of become this place. There's a lot going on there.
There is.
Yeah. Because aside from just the restaurant itself, you have Melvin's Jukebox. And it began, too, with Radio Lilies. And I kind of want to start there, because let's talk about the music of Jamaica and Mr. Jimmy Cliff.
Right. No, well, Jimmy is like one of the all-time greats of reggae music, obviously. You know, I remember actually one of the first things, even before going to Jamaica, that I saw was, you know, The Heart of They Come, which is one of the most iconic reggae movies ever made. But Jamaican movies ever made. But, you know, Jimmy came and opened up the radio. We opened up this little radio station to broadcast reggae music, Radio Lily. At RadioLily.com, and and Jimmy, through sort of connections and whatever, was able to come down and do a sort of a live reggae show, you know, to open it up, which was totally incredible.
Yeah, I mean, talk about setting the vibe.
Absolutely, like totally on point from day one.
Yeah, and you know, talk about setting the vibe, Melvin. I mean, he is such a character. He's such a persona. You know, serving some of the best juice in the city. And why was that an important part to Miss Lily's?
Well, I think, you know, I mean, we'd opened up the restaurant and we had an opportunity to expand into the next door, and we were thinking about, you know, what we could do, you know, into this new space. And he's such a natural brand extension. You know, we were talking about, you know, we wanted to set up a sort of a cafe in there that would be able to do delivery from, and where we could run more of a lunch vibe. And, you know, Melvin was such a perfect, you know, execution. He's just so positive and warm and welcoming, you know, and he makes awesome juice. You know, I'd known him for a long time when he was at Lifetime, the organic grocery on 6th Avenue there around the corner, very close to Lily's, and had got to know him while he was there, and just seemed like a natural extension for the place, you know. And he's been so perfect since joining the team.
Yeah, I mean, I love all the fresh coconut, and he is the only person, I think I told you this before we went on air, I don't quite like or understand Callaloo, and he's the only person that I'm willing to accept it from, because he'll put it in a shake every once in a while or a juice, and everything's all right with me.
That's right. I mean, look, Callaloo actually does taste great in a juice, you know. We have a Rockhouse Greens down in Jamaica. That's strictly Callaloo based, you know. But it is. It's an awesome vegetable in that spinach family.
Yeah, and kind of segueing from vegetables, the Rastafarians is a primarily vegetarian cuisine. I think a lot of people know, you know, Rastafari as you know, a way of life or music. But I mean, it's really has its base in the idea of, you know, what to eat.
No, absolutely. Like Ital food, which is, you know, comes from Vital. And it's very, actually, vegan is probably closer than vegetarian to the kind of the food philosophy that goes with it. But absolutely. And I think that's another aspect that they've brought to the culture in Jamaica around dining is, a much healthier approach. You know, it's one of the things being able to integrate, great foods. You know, we started an organic farm on the property of the Rockhouse now, and we actually serve, a lot of, our own fruits and vegetables straight into the menu there, which is a great aspect.
Yeah. Do you grow ackee?
Well, ackee is actually a very tricky thing to grow. You've got to have a pretty well-developed tree for that.
Yeah.
And it's a very dangerous food type. You know, they have many deaths a year from ackee poisoning.
Really?
If you don't, if you eat ackee before it's properly ripe, before it's opened, it can kill you.
So it's like
look up ackee deaths online.
You'll see, yeah, that's a wormhole. But it's like the blowfish of
Jamaica.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Importing this culture, you also had to import, you know, certain ingredients, I assume. I mean, how did you and, you know, Chef Adam, how were you able to source the things that you needed here in New York?
Well, I think the fact, firstly, that there's obviously a vibrant, you know, West Indian community here in New York. So a lot of the stuff was already here. So there wasn't, that was not so tough. I mean, some of the things are more difficult to find. You know, to get fresh Callaloo, you know, is like that's a more difficult to find. Actually track down people that will import that and bring it up. You know, because it tastes way, way better. You can buy it canned, right? Yeah, but it's certainly not the same thing as getting it fresh. So some of the things that took a bit more effort to track down, to get proper pimento, you know, the allspice that's the Jamaican one is a little bit trickier. But you know, because there's a big Jamaican contingent here, you can normally track down the things that you need.
You just follow the rum.
That's right.
Yeah. I feel like you just kind of sniff that out and everything else will follow. And I mean, let's talk about rum for a second too, because the rum trade, I think, helped internationalize Jamaican cuisine, or maybe even the coffee trade. I'm not sure which is kind of more of an export.
Probably a bit of both. Obviously Jamaica or the Caribbean in general is a massive rum exporter. You know, we have Appleton is based pretty close to where the hotel is, and you can do a kind of a tour of the Appleton distillery down there, which is great. But, you know, it's certainly part of the culture. And, you know, visiting the sort of the local, you know, rum bar, little sort of, tin shed shack, and the characters that you run into there is certainly part of the Jamaica experience.
Yeah, I mean, with all this rest and relaxation, there's a serious note. And you guys have done such a wonderful job with the Rockhouse Foundation down in Jamaica. And I want you to touch a little bit about how you kind of give back to that community.
Yeah, I mean, when we started the hotel, we tried to come with a philosophy of sort of being a responsible hotel, in a developing economy like Jamaica's. And we, you know, obviously we want to give the guests a great stay, and we want to make the Jamaicans partners in the success of the hotel. We kind of wanted to be environmentally, certified, but also we wanted to give back to the community. And about a bit over a decade ago, we began a non-profit called the Rockhouse Foundation to put traction behind this idea of giving back to the community. And we really work with local schools on redeveloping them. We've now fully renovated and rebuilt 5 local public schools, and as well as the local library in Negril. And we're just breaking ground right now on our 6th project, which is we're building the area's first special needs early childhood school down there. So it's been something, you know, that we've really got a lot of the goodwill from guests that have come through and have become supporters of the foundation on a regular basis. We've really been able to put a substantive program behind it. You know, we've invested over $3 million US now at this point in the program and the projects down there. you know, and we've been really able to get great support. We do a big annual fundraiser each year at Joe's Pub, and we've had awesome support for that. You know, a lot of the, you know, we've had a lot of great artists come and play that, from Shaggy and Sean Paul to, you know, Marcia Griffiths, or, you know, Barrington Levy, all kinds of like Jamaican icons have come and supported us in on that night. So, you know, one to look out for every October.
Yeah, it feels good to know that every roti and red stripe actually goes to a better place.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, and you know, it's a part of Lily's culture too. You know, a portion of the profits underwrites the foundation as well, from both Lily's and the Rock House. And I think it's one of the things that, you know, we've really put our, you know, dollars behind and really tried to make a success. And we're very proud of what we've been able to achieve down there. There's lots more to do. And, you know, we just feel very excited to be able to put some positivity into the, you know, into the landscape there.
Do your children think that you're cool because you know Shaggy and Sean Paul, or are they embarrassed by that fact?
Well, I think, you know, my 17-year-old is pretty much embarrassed by everything about me, I think. Yeah. You know, he's at that age kind of thing. But it's a bit of a mixed bag, I'd say.
Yeah.
And they've actually become more and more involved in the foundation too. He's actually doing a great thing right now. He's doing this through his school. They're organizing a 40-hour turn down where they turn off all their social media, TV, whatever, and they're creating a fundraiser for the foundation for the technology budget down in Jamaica. That's going to go on May 20th for the weekend.
That's so great. And I mean, if you want to disconnect completely, obviously go down to the grill, Jamaica, and spend some time at Rock House.
Absolutely. That's the right. And if you can't make it to Jamaica, stop by Miss Lily's and get the tropical vibes, transport yourself, and get the Jamaica feeling right here in New York.
Absolutely. And just remind me again, out of many, one people.
That's right.
That's all you need to know. Thank you so much, Paul, for being on. And again, stop by Miss Lily's whenever you can. You've been listening to The Food Scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. I'm your host, Michael Harlan Turkel. Hoping to have you back here next Tuesday at 3. Big thank you to Bonnie Plants for sponsoring. The music by Cookies, as always, and David engineering the heck out of it. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to this program on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @Heritage_Radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Aweli, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.